بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد
اللهم صل على محمد
وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Among the issues that we ought to possess and which plays an important role in our performance in this dunya and the achievement in the hereafter is awareness, is ma'rifah, is knowing. And many a times, if that awareness is high, no matter how short the span of one's life may be, the achievement is huge. It's like these people who know how to invest, when to invest, how to invest. So they know what the market is like, what the shares are like, and they can switch over so that they invest the most and they achieve the most. Certainly, if awareness was not there, man's life was in darkness. Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu was salam. Says that these lazy, drowsy, sleepy people will awake when they will die. The moment they depart from this dunya, only then will it be their wake-up call, and that's too late then. And then it would not benefit them at all. Because when a person has departed from here, he cannot make up at all. Awareness, although little, it plays an important part. Parents to their children, they have to increase the level of their ma'rifah. The house should be as such that, the atmosphere should be as such that the children, they automatically learn from the parents, even if they don't teach them anything. The atmosphere should be the atmosphere of salat, of prayers. You don't need to say that, get up, pray. If the atmosphere is of salat, automatically the person living and dwelling in that atmosphere, he will also start praying. If the atmosphere is of dua, dua will be there. If the atmosphere is that of hijab, hijab will be there. If the atmosphere is of all these ahkam that Allah has sent for us, the children who dwell in that atmosphere, it's like fish in an aquarium, in the sea, no one needs to teach them. They know because of that atmosphere which is there. So if a good atmosphere is created, the children also, up to a certain extent, they are guaranteed. We don't need to do a lot. If the atmosphere, God forbid, at home is bad, or that ma'rifah, that awareness that needs to be taught to them is absent, then the ultimate end also is bad. In one of these visions that were seen, a very pious person who lived in Ray in near Tehran, he, during his lifetime, he dug a well, which is about 50 years ago now. And people living in that area, they are still benefiting from that well. About 50,000 people living there, and they are benefiting from that water. A good deed he did during his lifetime, And for that also a huge reward, so long as people will benefit from that water, that benefit in the hereafter also will be there for that person. Another pious person, he sees him in these visions and dreams as if a never-ending land has been given to him in the hereafter, a very great rank, all those blessings that one can ever think of, blessed with him. And then he says, you've got an exalted, a great rank in the hereafter. And all of that, a result of that one well which he dug during his lifetime, from where people are benefiting. And then that person, he says that he didn't have any children. He says, I wish I had just one child. And if that one child said, La ilaha illallah, just once, much more than what you see has been given to me here in the hereafter, would have been given. So just for that one, La ilaha illallah. And if that was with awareness, with ma'rifah, then again, the reward is also huge. Amir al-Mu'mineen, in his wasiyah at the time of his death, he says, La tamutunna illa wa antum muslimun. You must not die, but that you must be a Muslim. You must be a Muslim. So, awareness, it plays an important part. Here, in another quote, again from Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wa salam. Says that man human la yashba'an talib ilmin wa talib al-dunya, that there are two hungry individuals who never fill, who never get saturated. Now who are they? A person hungry for knowledge, he never gets full. And another person who's hungry to reach, to achieve the desires of this world, he also never gets full. If he has said that there is another planet and there are a lot more riches over there, he will get to that planet. If he has said that in this world God, he has created only, for example, 2,000 tons of gold and 3,000 tons of silver, and he has that, again he will ask Allah, is there anything more anywhere else I can get that? He never gets full. The same thing is with someone who is in need and in seeks knowledge. He also never gets full. And they who have tasted this awareness, they never stop. This is something which Aimma, all of them, admit. And we also can see in our day-to-day life. No matter how much a person studies, still he finds that there is some more to learn. Plato, when he was giving away his life, he still wanted to learn. Another point, another issue. Someone sitting there, he said that you are dying. What will you do with all that? And he says that it's a pity for a learned person to die, and it's 1,000 pities for an illiterate person to live. So the more a person learns, it is for his own benefit. The more the awareness, the higher the achievement in the hereafter. And the same is with someone who is bonded with riches and wealth of this world, he never gets full at all. In a report, again, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says that talibu, that al-ilmu khayrun min al-mal, that knowledge is better than wealth. Says that al-ilm yahrisuka, this knowledge will protect you, but you have to protect wealth. And then says, knowledge will purify you, but you have to keep on purifying your wealth. Says, if you spend your knowledge, it increases. If you spend your wealth, it decreases. So on and so forth, tens of issues have been mentioned over here in this lengthy quote from Amir al-Mu'mineen regarding knowledge and regarding wealth. So, temptations are there in both, and they are never ending and endless. Among the best things that could be quoted over here with regards to knowledge is that he says that, وَالْعِلْمُ يَدْعُوا إِلَى التَّوَاضُعُ, that ilm, knowledge, it invites you to be humble. It invites you to be down to earth. But wealth does not do that. Wealth wants you to be proud. Wealth wants you to raise your head. As a result of that, you will ruin yourself. Knowledge, it protects you from every aspect. Wealth does not. A whole surah has been revealed. It says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Tabbat yada abi lahabim wa tab, ma aghna anhu maluhu wa ma kasab, sayasla naran dhata wahab, wa mra'atuhu hammalat al-hatab, fi jidha hablum min masab. That wealth that was given to him, it never made him, was of no use for him. And broken were the hands of that person. Cursed was he. Knowledge, it helps you and in your hereafter, but wealth will make you regret. With knowledge, you depart from this dunya, and your baggage is your knowledge, it will accompany you. With wealth, you will depart without your wealth, and you will be all alone. There's a riwayah, just coming to the point, again another riwayah from Ma'asum, he says that Satudfanu bid'atun minni bi'ardi Khurasan la yazuruha mu'minun illa awjaba Allah azza wa jal lahu al-jannah وَحَرَّمَ جَسَدَهُ عَلَى النَّارِ. Masoom, he says that very soon a part of my existence will be buried in Khurasan, which is Mashhad now, in Iran. And then says that no one will pay his ziyarah to him, will visit him. No mu'min will visit this ma'soom, that is the aged imam who will be buried in Mashhad. But that Allah will make it wajib for that person who pays that ziyarat to the aged imam to enter the paradise. And then says, the body of that individual who pays ziyarat to the aged imam, body of that person, the fire of the Jahannam will be haram on that body.
Ya Allah.
Again, what does this mean? Is that any person, any Tom, Dick and Harry goes to Mashhad, pays a ziyarah, benefits from that? We have to be careful when we recite ahadith, when we understand them. It's not just a word of mouth, but everything in every issue, awareness and ma'rifah plays an important part. Elsewhere, قَالَ ذَمِنْتُ لِمَنْ زَارَ أَبِي بِتُوس عَارِفًا بِحَقِّهِ الْجَنَّةِ. Elsewhere, Ma'asumi says that whosoever pays a visit to my father in Tus, in Mashhad, I will guarantee the paradise for him on a condition that he knows him. That ma'rifah has to be there. Ma'rifah, that we know him, he is the rightful imam. When he is the rightful imam, we also have to be obedient to him rightfully in all affairs, in all walks of life. And in this obedience also, I think I did mention here, I don't know where and when. Obedience, 100%. Whatever he says, do, do. Whatever he says, don't, don't. And the reports are such that he says that if Ma'asum, he slices an apple into two and says, this side is halal, that side is haram, you shouldn't question. Just eat the one which is halal, without questioning. You can't say that. Why is that? It was the same apple. How come that one becomes halal, this side becomes haram? Or again, in another quote, a person comes to the aged imam and says that, Imam, I am your true follower. I love you. I will be obedient to you. I am obedient to you. Whatsoever you say, I will do. And Imam says, okay, if that's the case, jump into this burning oven now. In reply, that person says that you want me to jump into that burning oven. Quran says, لا تلقوا بأيديكم إلى التهلكة. Quran says that you shouldn't hurt yourself harm yourself. And if I put myself in that oven, it's going to kill me, burn me. Another person comes up. Imam says, jump into that burning oven. He says, Imam, with my footwear on or without?
SubhanAllah.
Imam says, as you wish, as you please. He jumps in. After a while, Imam says, come out. He comes out. He says that, what did you find in there? A garden of bliss.
SubhanAllah.
Nothing happens. Obedience should be like that. Although these things are easy to say, but tough. So we have to practice. Among the issues that we analyze carefully in this whole era of the ghaiba of Imam al-Asr, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-sharif, we are all being trained, if we act in accordance to the ahkam, it is a training. It is an experience which we are gaining, and this training will be benefited during the time of the Imam. If we practice all of these ahkam in this time, which is the absence or the era of the ghaiba of the Imam, when he comes, it's going to be easier for us. If we do nothing now and just sit and wait and say that let him come, let him command, and then we will abide by his commands, and that is not possible. We have to train now. And again, in the topic today, I will touch this issue. The whole idea is wali mihwari, as they say, and that is, we just assume that wali, he is there, and we are clustering around that wali. We are gathering around him. Again, if you see the whole concept and the idea that we have regarding obedience to parents, we have to be obedient to our parents, whether they serve us, whether they don't. Had they served us when we were little, or had they not? Were they Muslims? Were they not? Whatever were they, good, bad, whatever, still we have to respect them. Only in one issue, and that is when they invite you towards disobedience to Allah, you just put a line over there, sorry, I can't. Again, you can't disrespect them. That obedience has to be there. And in many issues we find in history, in riwaya, that children were good, parents were bad. And even we have instances wherein the children were judges, and the judgment was that a father should be killed, and judge the son who rightfully says that the father has to be killed. The ruling from Ma'asum is that you are the judge. I do accept. The ruling is that he should be killed. That is also accepted. But you don't do it. You being the son, you don't kill your father. Although it is a rightful ruling, but a son should not. There are certain things very delicate in Islam that if someone sits and analyzes, he would see that this is a religion which adapts totally, wholly, solely with the fitrah and nature of mankind and with everything. But it's a whole system which Allah has. We are said that we should be obedient to our parents. Why? So that we practice. If we are obedient to our parents, then one day when Imam comes, we are obedient to him. Why? Rasulullah, in one of these reports, he says that أَنَا وَعَلِيٌّ أَبَوَى هَذِهِ الْأُمَّةِ, that me and Ali are the fathers of this nation. If we are obedient to our own fathers and our own mothers, then it's going to be easier for us to be obedient to the Prophet, to Imam Ali, to Imam al-Asr. If we are declared, God forbid, disobedient by our parents, then what fame do we have? It's shameful to admit that we will be obedient to the Imam of our time. So we have to be careful. Well, we shouldn't take things easy. There are a lot of things to be observed when it comes to respect to parents, and that is by children. You don't stretch your legs in front of your parents. You should not. Whenever they say anything, accept. When you want to offer something to them, don't just throw it towards them. In a way, that you are the beggar and you're giving something to your master so that they pick up from your hand. All these delicate things are there, inshallah. If I get time in these forthcoming nights, we'll touch them. So, in that report and in the next one says, to someone who pays a visit to the aged imam, the paradise is guaranteed. His body will be haram for the hellfire. He will not be punished. Says that on a condition that he possesses that ma'rifah, that awareness. He knows who the imam is. And with this ma'rifah, miraculous things can be performed. A person, he was walking towards Karbala. On his way, he meets a shepherd. And the shepherd says, where are you going to? He says, I'm going to Karbala. It's Thursday, I'm going to Karbala. Just want to say, for the ziyarat of Abu Abdullah. And this shepherd, he says, what is ziyarah? He, in easy languages, says that I want to go to Karbala to say salam to Imam. And then the shepherd says that when you say salam to a person, you get a reply back. When you go and say salam to Imam, do you get a reply back? So it needs a lot of guts for a person who asks that question. That when you say salam to Imam, do you get a reply back? Now, he doesn't want to say that he gets a reply or he doesn't get a reply. He asks the same question to the shepherd. That if you say salam to Imam, do you get a reply back? The shepherd says that if I don't get a reply back from Imam, I would never say salam to him. So that too required a lot of guts. That if I don't get a reply, I would never say salam. And then he says, let's give it a go. And this person who was going there, he says, Salamun alaykum, in a very respectful and an obedient, honorable way to Abu Abdullah. And he gets a faint reply back. That is the reply for that salam. And then he says, you give it a go now to the shepherd. The shepherd, again, with utmost honor and respect, as if his whole existence is obedience and honor, says salam, and he gets a reply as if a shaking of the earth, a reply back from the imam. So that is that ma'rifah which he possessed. As a result of that, that miraculous deeds also could be seen and heard. Knowing imam with awareness is important. And that we have to recognize who the imam of our time is. Obedience to the imam again. And that obedience has to be seen and sought in our day-to-day affairs so that it's easier for us when he returns, when he comes, to be obedient to him. Again, we have to know the light of God. The nur of God, the argument, the hujjah of God, which is the imam, who is a guide, who is an icon of obedience to him. If with all that ma'rifah we know who the imam is, and then we say the ziyarat and the salam to the imam, then the reward is as such that harrama jasadahu ala an-nar. His body will be haram on the hellfire. That is, ma'rifah has to be possessed. Now this is the fruit, not of ziyarah, but the fruit of awareness. Thousands of people may visit. It's good to visit, we have to visit. Now with all respect, with all the more or less ma'rifah which a person possesses, he has to pay that visit to the imam. So all that reward that we have in the reports is the reward based upon the ma'rifah and the awareness of a person, not just for the ziyarat. So it may be a person possesses a lot of ma'rifah, but the means cannot be achieved for him to pay the visit to the Imam. He can say that ziyarah from here with that ma'rifah. And again the reward would be the same, that he will be blessed with the paradise, the body would be haram on the hellfire. So it is ma'rifah again. And in our reports we have that if a person knows something, or an alim, he will be punished once, but someone who doesn't know will be punished twice. If I know that salat is wajib and I perform it, if I know that salat is wajib but I don't perform it, or there is another person who doesn't know that salat is wajib and does not perform it. So the first one, he's done his job, okay. The second one, who knows salat to be wajib but does not pray, he will be punished once. At least he's done a little bit of work, and that is he has come to know that salat is wajib. But the second person who hasn't known and who does not perform salat, again he's got two punishments. One for why didn't he know? Why didn't he learn? The second is why didn't he pray? And based upon this, it is our belief, and all the books of Aqaid, they say that Al-Kuffar yu'aqabuna ala al-usul, and in addition to that yu'aqabuna ala al-furu', that kuffar, you can't say that they will be punished only for not having faith in God and the Day of Judgment. No, they will be punished for not having faith in God and the Day of Judgment plus the prayers they didn't offer, the fast which they did not observe, all those ahkam that were not observed, for all of that. So it's two punishments. So that ba'rifah plays an important part again in lessening that adab in the hereafter and also in this dunya. The more the ma'rifah, the better a person can end up. Again, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu was salam, says that ala wa inna al-yawm al-midmar wa ghadan as-sibaq wa sabqatu al-jannah wa al-ghayatu al-nar. Beautiful saying. Says midmar is the test field wherein the horses and camels are taken to be trained, and then from there they are taken to the race. That is, there is a place, a field, a plot when these animals are brought in and they are trained. If the animal is too fat, he is given exercises, the right food and drink, the right nourishment so that the weight is correct. The training is given, how he should gallop, how he should run. And then when he is trained, only then he is taken to the race. Not any animal from anywhere is taken straight to the race, no. Here, Hazrat Amir, he says that, according, that says that one must have the awareness, first of all, that this dunya is the test ground. That you have to prepare yourself in this test ground. Where is the race? The race is in the hereafter. And what will happen then? The cup will be given, and that is the paradise. To those who win this race, so we who are in this dunya, we have to prepare ourselves in this test center for us to participate in the race in the hereafter, which is then to get a cup which is wasabqatul jannah in the hereafter, and to get a cup in the paradise. So again, the awareness has to be there that we are in this dunya. Why? No, we have to know that. Based upon that, the performance has to be there, and then the reward and the punishment will be there in the hereafter. This awareness can be sought from a book like Quran. And again, a tongue like the tongue of the Prophet of Islam should elaborate it. What does it mean? And a heart like the heart of Amir al-Mu'mineen should explain that what is meant by this test center. What do we do here? And more than 1,000 ayat in Quran, they talk about akhirah, and the race and the cup, which is the paradise, more than 1,000 verses, which is a lot. Says As-sabiqoon, As-sabiqoon, ulaika al-muqarrabun fi jannat al-na'im. The foremost are the foremost, they are the nearest. Fi jannat al-na'im, and in the paradise they will be. And then says that they, for instance, who had no practice at all in this test center, or like those animals who were never trained and were never brought to this test center, how will they end up? You can't expect those animals to win the race. You can't. The same thing is with us, the human beings. Someone who doesn't possess that ma'rifah of this test center, how can he participate? He cannot. He will never win the race. And Quran says that مَنْ كَانَ فِي هَذِهِ أَعْمَى فَهُوَ فِي الْآخِرَةِ أَعْمَى. Someone who is blind in this dunya is blind in the hereafter. You can't expect miracles in the hereafter. No, miracles don't happen even here and will never happen over there. Someone who is blind over here will be blind over there. وَأَذَلُّ سَبِيلًا. And the path which he is on, it is the path of deviation. And someone who wants to head to the paradise, again in Surah Al-Hadid, Quran says that يَوْمَ تَرَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ يَسْعَى نُورُهُمْ بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَبِأَيْمَانِهِمْ بُشْرَاكُمُ الْيَوْمَ جَنَّاتٌ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارِ خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا أَبَدًا. There it said that someone who is blind in this world will be blind in the hereafter. Someone who couldn't recognize the test center in this dunya will never win in the race in the hereafter. Here says that someone who possesses that there in the hereafter, you will see mu'mineen, they have noor. And that noor, that light, will be lit in front of them, which will show them the path and how to go forward. And people will say that, from where did you get that torch? From where did you get that light? From where? Says that that light, you should have got it from dunya. You can't get that light in the hereafter. That should have been sought in dunya, in that test center. Without that light, without that noor, no one can ever. And then they would say that يُنَعْدُونَهُمْ أَلَمْ نَكُنْ مَعَكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَى وَلَكِنَّكُمْ فَتَنْتُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ. Say that, can we have some of that light? No, you can't. You've deceived yourself, you've cheated yourself. Should you want that light, it should have been back there in dunya. Here, no one gets any more light. Whatever was to be provided from that test center. Here in the race, you can't cheat. You have to just win the race or lose the race. So those who are aware, those who possess that ma'rifah, they make a lot, and with a little of investment, they achieve huge benefits. And they know how to turn this little into a lot. One of those winners who invested a little in this dunya and achieved a lot in the hereafter, in just 17 years, is Qamar ibn Hashim, Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, Ibn Amir al-Mu'mineen. 17 years, because if you say that everything became wajib on him at the age of 15, add another 17, 32. He gives away his life at the age of 32. So he just got 17 years to win the race in the hereafter, or 17 years to practice in this test center. And in those 17 years, what he achieved and what he benefited, the shuhada, all of them are going to be jealous at that point and the rank which he possesses. What is that which he has achieved? What did he do in this test center that he has arrived at that very high point? And you find many of these mala'in, again, who lived in this dunya just maybe for that amount of time, or even more, or even less. But what did they achieve? Only wrath, only adab, only chastisement. Among them is this Shah of Iran, who again ruled for about 16-17 years, which is Reza Khan, the one before this Pahlavi. He rules for 16-17 years. He tried all his best to deviate everyone. He closed down all the houses, And uttering the word and name of Abu Abdullah was banned. No one had the courage and guts to say Assalamu alayka ya Abu Abdullah during those 16-17 years of his tensed rule. And it was as such that he defamed ulama so much during his lifetime that no one had the courage to wear that amama on his head. And it was banned. So everything that was negative, again after that, you have many of these tyrants, day in, day out, they just come up in newer and a better or a worse versions. Among them was this Mal'un Saddam. In that little time, what did he do and what did he invest and what did he get and what will he get? So this test center, as explained by Amir al-Mu'mineen, the better you practice, the better you learn in this test center, it would be easier to win the race in the hereafter to get a cup which is the paradise, and that is. Quran says, there is no rank higher than Shahada. فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ الْمُجَاهِدِينَ عَلَى الْقَاعِدِينَ أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا. And this is something that all of the schools of thought among the Muslims, they say that the highest rank which a person can achieve is Shahada. And again in Surah Tawbah, Quran says that إِنَّ اللَّهَ اشْتَرَى مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ أَنفُسَهُمْ وَأَمْوَالَهُمْ بِأَنَّ لَهُمُ الْجَنَّةِ. That Allah, He buys from mu'mineen their souls, their possessions, their wealth, their belongings. What instead? He gives you the paradise. For a martyr, for a shaheed, Allah, He opens a special file. And then some reports, they say that may this person have committed sins as huge as this planet or this creation. Well, no one does that many sins. Says that for that one task of his, which is giving away his life for the sake of God, I will waive and forgive everything whatever he has done for that one task. It was mentioned, I think, over here in Surah Yasin, says قِيلَ ادْخُلِ الْجَنَّةَ قَالَ يَا لَيْتَ قَوْمِي يَعْلَمُونَ بِمَا غَفَرَ لِي رَبِّي وَجَعَلَنِي مِنَ الْمُكْرَمِينَ. That on the day of the... Now, we normally say in ziyarat that يَا لَيْتَنَا كُنَّ مَعَكُمْ. That ma'asum imam, Sayyidu Shuhada, Aba Abdullah, ma'asumeen, Ali Akbar, etc., etc. We wish we were with you, to support you, to be with you. But here in Surah Yasin, the shaheed of Surah Yasin, he says that يَا لَيْتَ قَوْمِ يَعْلَمُونَ بِمَا غَفَرَ لِي رَبِّي وَجَعَلَنِي مِنَ الْمُكْرَمِينَ. That I wish, that is from the hereafter, from the paradise, you knew what Allah has blessed us in the hereafter, that He has enlisted us among the mukrameen. Mukrameen are the angels. Mukrameen are the ma'sumeen, the imams. He says that we wish that you were with us to see how exalted Allah has dignified us in the hereafter. Elsewhere says, وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ. Never think, never ever think that someone who gives away his life in the way of Allah, he is dead, he is not dead, he is alive. وَعِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ. And he is blessed, his sustenance is from Allah. During the time of Shah Abbas Safavi, I think about 700-800 years ago, he goes to pay a visit to the shrine of Aba Abdullah al-Husayn in Karbala. After the ziyarat of Aba Abdullah, when he wanted to come back, his advisors, his associates, they come and tell him that, well, let's go and pay the visit to the grave of Hur again. He says, Hur, I won't go for his ziyarat. The advisors say, why? He says that he wasn't from the Imam's army. And was he from the Imam? And then they say he wasn't. But then on the day of Ashura, he turned to the Imam. And he was the first one who fought and sought that Shahada in the service of Imam. Shah Abbas says that, still, I don't believe. I don't believe. Had he twisted had he shifted from that batil to haq and sought martyrdom in the service of Imam, he would have been buried with the 72 that are present, with the other shuhada that are present here. Why is it that the 70 are buried over here and this one is buried far away near the river? There's a long distance. And then he says that based upon this ayah, that لا تحسبن الذين قتلوا في سبيل الله أمواتا, that we believe, you say, Quran has said that a shaheed is never dead, he is always alive. If that is the case, and he was Husayni, I instruct you to dig open his grave, exhume the grave, and see if the body is there, I will make the shrine of this person, Hur. If there is nothing over there, then I was right in my claim. He instructs, the grave is exhumed, and they find the body after 700-800 years as if has been laid to rest just this day. And then they see that there is this handkerchief tied onto the head of Hur, which is said to be, which was the handkerchief woven by Hazrat Zahra. And when Hur's head was bleeding, Sayyid al-Shuhada, he ties that handkerchief onto the head of Hur for the blood to stop bleeding. And then Shah Abbas, he admits that I was wrong in my claim, what I see is right. Says that I'll take this handkerchief with what wars and battles ahead as a token of Tabarruk, we'll keep it with us so that we win all the battles. The moment he takes that handkerchief out, blood starts gushing out. They try to put all different bandages which they have, but it wouldn't stop. He says that that has to go back onto the head of Hur, which was woven by Hazrat Zahra. And then the moment they put it back, the blood stops. He takes a thread out of that and says, I'll keep this thread as tabarruk for me, for myself. And there, as he promised, he builds the shrine of Hur in Karbala. The reports, they say that the first drop of a shaheed on the ground, Allah forgives everything for him. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salatu wasalam says that among all the shuhada, from the first person until the last person, that min al-awwaleen wal-akhirin, that is from the time of Hazrat Adam to the last person, whoever it's going to be on this planet Earth, he says that there is no one like Abul Fadl al-Abbas. In these 17 years, in this test center, he achieved that great. And then that Ma'asum, he says that may my parents be your ransom, that is, to Abul Fadl al-Abbas. And it is amazing that how far a man, he could fly and achieve those huge ranks in this dunya, and in this journey, and in the hereafter. And the means, the tools, the ship, or the ammunition, you could say, to get to that destination of that high rank is ma'rifah. If a person possesses that ma'rifah, if a person possesses that awareness, the more the awareness, the better the achievement. The more the awareness, the better we can perform in this dunya. And in brief, all of this that was mentioned in a sentence from our sixth Imam, he says that my uncle, his awareness had reached the core of all haqa'iq, of all realities. What this means, I don't know. There is a saying, which there is a dua which says that Allahumma arina al-ashya'a kama hiya, that O God, make it as such, make my livelihood as such, that I see the realities, I see what is, I see the things as they are, not with those curtains, not with those barriers. Now again, this is something which I don't know. And someone like Abul Fadl al-Abbas, he himself has to explain what it means. We wish that we had a tongue like the tongue of Abul Fadl, and he elaborated for us these issues, what they mean. Now, do we give this right to Sayyid al-Shuhada that besides the body of Abul Fadl, he says, why he says that my back broke? Who is Abul Fadl? And why does Sayyid al-Shuhada say, upon the demise and the passing away of Abul Fadl al-Abbas, that al-an in kasara dhahri, that now my back broke? Why does he say that? Does it mean that by back he means his own back, which is on that vertebral column? It is the back of life, the backbone of life, the backbone of this universe. By the passing away of Abul Fadl, it means the creation, it shook. The bone or the support, the column of this creation, it bent, it broke. Many have lost brothers in this world. But who is this person that when he is lost, Aba Abdullah, he says, my back broke. How can one believe that in Karbala, Aba Abdullah was pleased and he was at rest by the presence of Aba Abdullah, Abul Fadl al-Abbas? And it is amazing, we see that the relationship between Aba Abdullah al-Husayn and Abul Fadl al-Abbas is like the relationship of the Prophet of Islam with Amir al-Mu'mineen. That people, they saw Aba Abdullah, he broke down. The first one to inquire what happened was Sakina. She cried so much that she couldn't speak when Abul Fadl al-Abbas passed away. She comes in the middle of the tent and she holds the column of the tent as if, what does it mean? Meaning that, don't ask me about my uncle. This camp has no master anymore. As the support of the camp is that column, I'm holding that column, meaning that this camp, this column, this support has now broken. In the ziyarat that we have for Abul Fadl al-Abbas, it is amazing. Masoom, he says that, أَشْهَدُ لَكَ بِالتَّسْلِيمِ وَالتَّصْدِيقِ وَالْوَفَى وَالنَّصِيحَةِ, that I bear witness that you, Abul Fadl al-Abbas, were all submission. You were all loyalty, all truth, and all advice. After Hazrat Zahra, Amir al-Mu'mineen marries Umm al-Baneen, a lady of high honor. And the reason for marrying Umm al-Baneen was that Imam said that I want someone who could bring me brave boys. And now that she is the wife of Amir al-Mu'mineen, she doesn't say that I am the stepmother of the sons and daughters of Zahra. She says, I was a servant of Zahra then, and I will remain a servant of Zahra even now. I am not the stepmother, and I cannot put myself in that status and rank which she possessed. She was the wife of Amir al-Mu'mineen, mother of Hasanain and Zahra, and Zainab and Umm Kulsoom. I am not. I am just a servant, a slave of theirs. A lady of that great dignity, and so much down to earth and humble, she raises these four children of hers. First of them is Qamar ibn Hashim, Abul Fadl al-Abbas, Abdullah, Ja'far and Usman. And all four of them die on the day of Ashura. In addition to that, two of the sons of Abul Fadl al-Abbas, they also give away their life for their uncle, Sayyid al-Shuhada, on that day of Ashura. Like Quran, which is eternal, Ahlul Bayt too are eternal. The Prophet says that he who has fulfilled the needs of humanity by these two valid sources, which is Quran and Ahlul Bayt, they must never be separated. Quran must never be separated from Ahlul Bayt. Ahlul Bayt must never be put aside from Quran. Both of them hand in hand together. And the Prophet says that Allah, he entrusted the progeny of all the prophets in me, and he entrusted the progeny of all the Imams in Ali. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, he is like his father, Amir al-Mu'mineen, in protecting Sayyid al-Shuhada, like his father protected the Prophet of Islam. When Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas is born, and Amir al-Mu'mineen is informed that Umm al-Baneen has given birth to a son, he rushes from the mosque, comes to home, and says, "Where is the baby?" Holds the baby, is pleased, is happy. The first thing he's done is he rolls the sleeves up and kisses the arms of this infant. Umm al-Baneen, she's upset, she says that, "Is there any defect, is there any problem with the baby, with the infant, that you kiss his arms like that?" And Mu'mineen says that, "No, these arms are going to support, these arms are going to be amputated, these arms are going to be severed in the service of my son Hussein. These are not tiny hands, these are strong hands." Abbas means disapproval, as in thoughts, disapproval in being in displeasure. Abu al-Fadl, he was very smart, very beautiful, good looking, and he has 17 titles that were given to him. And the best or the most famous of this is Qamar ibn Hashim. And among those famous titles that he possesses is Saqqa. Saqqa means someone who quenches the thirst. Qamar ibn Hashim means the moon of Bani Hashim. As his father Amir al-Mu'mineen, who slept in Shi'b Abi Talib on the instructions of his father Abu Talib to protect the Prophet of Islam, here Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, like his father, is there to protect Sayyid al-Shuhada so that he lives. And that's why Sayyid al-Shuhada says that when Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas collapses, "Al-an inkasara dhahri," now my back broke. Regarding Amir al-Mu'mineen, the Prophet says that "Ana madinatul ilm wa aliyun babuha," that "I am the city of knowledge and Ali is the door." Sayyid al-Shuhada says that whosoever wants to get to me, the door is Abbas. Whosoever wants